is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It is Monday, my friends. Welcome to it. And summer is here in earnest now, of course. Might actually feel like it was 57 degrees on Saturday. I'm like 57 and rain. I'm like, really? This is summer? Anyhow, everything's lush and green here, to say the least. So we've got that going for us. And, of course, the 4th of July weekend coming up. So holiday weekend, a lot of folks will be getting out and enjoying sun. Not that long ago, I learned of a friend of mine who had been diagnosed with skin cancer, melanoma. He was a roofer and spent a lot of time on roofs, putting shingles on and so forth. Unfortunately, he did not survive. Skin cancer, very deadly, by the way. So skin care in this environment is extremely important. And did you know you can even get melanoma in your eyes, nose, and your mouth? It's all true. Let me just tell you. Swapna Patel here, Dr. Swapna Patel, a melanoma expert here to talk about how we can protect ourselves this summer season. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you here. You know, and I did... I'd known this gentleman for years, and in fact, he put the roof on my house. And talking to his brother,
oh,
here,
wow.
And been a couple of years, but you know, Steve had been on roofs, putting on shingles for all these years, you know, without a shirt and working in the sun and the hot, and you know, and went to the doctor, and he had on his shoulders and back, and it took his life. And I don't think people realize how deadly skin cancer really is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So skin cancer, malignant melanoma, which is the type that your friend had, is the deadliest form of skin cancer. So there's a lot of non-malignant skin cancers out there. We consider them to be non-melanoma skin cancers, basal cell carcinomas, squamous cell carcinomas. These occur often on sun-exposed areas, the face, and so forth. But the one to really worry about is malignant melanoma. And you know, these melanoma patients often suffer from being told, oh, well, it's on your skin, we'll just cut it out. It's not like it's affecting a deeper organ, when in fact melanoma can spread to deeper organs frequently, as in your friend's case. And in the U.S., one American every hour is dying from melanoma. Sad to say that these rates are rising over the last 30 and 40 years instead of declining like with other cancers, lung cancer, for example. Mm-hmm. Melanoma is on the increase.
I'm going to be a little bit more graphic because I have another friend that was diagnosed just at the end of last summer with skin cancer on part of his face. And you say, well, it's just on the skin, so on and so forth. His tumor that you can see just barely on the face, for lack of a better analogy, was more like an octopus. And when they were done taking this tumor out, it had fingers and tentacles and so on. Now, they did get it all. And he grew up on a lake in northern Michigan, spending his summers out on the water and so forth. And in those days, again, not using skincare, but it wasn't just some easy fix. The thing had tentacles and arms, if you will, that they had to go in his face, root around and get it. And he's healed now. But these sorts of things, people need to be aware that this is very serious.
It's very serious. And as you point out, you know, these scars are usually on visible skin, exposed skin. The scars are not subtle. For a melanoma is the only cancer that's deadly in millimeters. So we think the tip of a ballpoint pen is about 2 millimeters. A 2 millimeter melanoma can absolutely be deadly. And the scar that you would need, the surgical margins that you would need to remove something just millimeters in size, is several inches. And so now yeah, you've got a teeny pinpoint, you know, spot on your arm or on your face, but the scar can actually be quite extensive. So, you know, lucky for your one friend that it can be completely taken care of, but there are ramifications with, you know, surgery and extensive scars and so on and so forth. But you bring up an excellent point in both of these cases, which is we know what the carcinogen is. We can point to the cancer-causing agent, and generally that's ultraviolet radiation exposure. So in your friend's case, these are both outdoor, you know, ultraviolet exposures. But we're actually seeing an increase in melanoma, likely due to indoor ultraviolet exposure use. And this is with the rapid increase in the number of indoor tanning salons that we're seeing. And youth everywhere is using these indoor tanning salons and then decades later paying the price, you know, unfortunately, for tan skin.
Well, you know, I go back, and we're on the line with Dr. Sadna Patel. Talking about skin cancer in the summer season and the summer sun warnings, they should be out there. I had two notable burns in my life. One, I admit I may have had a beer too many, and I fell asleep in the stands at Tiger Stadium. I admit it. And I woke up, and I had roasted my shoulders like a Christmas goose. Yeah, it was pretty ugly. And then another time, yeah, I admit it, doctor. I had too many beers. I fell asleep in the stadium in the cheap seats. And I was like, I had to have been 21 years old. I had to have been, because I certainly couldn't have been younger. And then I also burned my face terribly bad fishing once a few years ago in Arkansas. I mean, terribly burned my face to the point that most of the skin, you know, dried and fell off and so forth. It was a terrible burn. And I wonder now, yeah, both these have been years ago, should I or somebody like me, anybody listening who's had a bad sunburn that's notable that they remember in their life, should we seek out a dermatologist or a physician and say, hey, listen, I had these bad burns 15, 20, 30 years ago. Anything I should be concerned with today? And the answer is probably yes.
Yes. I mean, you know, you're absolutely right. You have a history of something that could increase your risk down the road. You know, so one bad lifetime sunburn certainly does increase your risk down the road of developing something like a malignant melanoma. But really, if you have skin of any type, you need to be seeing the dermatologist. If you have dark brown skin, if you have light skin, if you have Asian skin, there's half of your skin you can't even see on your backside, on the top of your head. You know, you have moles everywhere. I caught myself in the mirror the other day just toweling off, and I looked at my back, and there's a mole back there that I can barely see. I can barely crane myself enough to see it. You know, in no way can I tell if it's changing over time. And so really everybody should see a dermatologist a minimum of once a year. But if you have a history or a family history of these types of skin cancers, or you've already had something nipped off that was a precancerous lesion, potentially you need to see them more often. And what I would suggest is, you know, that your audience listeners should start making those appointments now. It's the summer season. They're likely to endure some ultraviolet exposure this summer. And a dermatologist is one of the hardest doctors in America to get an appointment with. So if they call now, they're likely to get in before the end of the year, before their insurance premiums, you know, change over for the next year.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I have a history of increasing risk. That doesn't have to do with beer and Tiger Stadium. That has to do with skin cancer. Just so we're clear on that, doctor. Well, you know, just trying to get my disclaimer in there. Help a brother out here. All right. Doctor, I greatly appreciate your time. Of course, skin care, you know, make sure you have sunblock that's of decent strength, 50 or better, right?
Yeah, you know, it's probably 30 or better. 50 is great. 30 offers you about 95% protection from the UVA, UVB rays, as long as it's broad spectrum. 50 offers you about 3% more than that. So, you know, marginal returns above 30. Sunglasses with UVA and UVB protection to protect your eyes. And then, of course, eye exams, dental exams. They're looking for discolorations such as melanoma in your eyes and mouth annually as well.
All right, doctor, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Steve. Have a good day.
You as well, my friend. Dr. Sadna Patel here on the program. She was a good deal of fun. I liked her. I liked her, everybody. Let's have that doctor back.
Michigan's radio program of record is The Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
Hey, is this thing on? Holy cow, it's a radio program. Hello, everybody. It's Monday. It's The Steve Gruber Show. Good to have you on board. Glad to be here. It's going to be a good week. It's 4th of July, of course. A lot of celebratory events going on. Parades. Consuming of mass quantities of charred animal flesh. Hot dogs, burgers, the whole bit. And maybe you'll be able to sneak in a television program along the way if it rains somewhere over the weekend. In case that happens, we've got our strategic director of television studies, Mike Hughes, here with us this morning to talk about it. Mike, welcome back.
How are you doing? And that's absolutely sure. I mean, first of all, I love to be out at the 4th of July fireworks whenever possible. But if there's ever a time where you can't be out there, it's actually one of TV's best nights. They have really, really good stuff every 4th of July, live stuff. This year it's on two different networks, 8 o'clock on NBC and on PBS. NBC then reruns at 10 o'clock. PBS reruns at 9:30. And this is like live music TV like you don't usually get. I mean, NBC has Kelly Clarkson. They got Meghan Trainor just a couple days before she comes to Lansing for the Common Ground. And a bunch of other stuff, Brad Paisley and so forth. And then PBS just, you know, stuffs the thing full. They've got this young Hunter Hayes, and they've got Alabama, and they've got Barry Manilow, and they've even got classical people because they're PBS. They feel like they have to. And this is, and PBS is done live from the Capitol lawn in Washington, D.C. NBC's is done from New York City. It's just good television. So if for some reason you have to be watching TV on Saturday night, catch one of those. Good TV.
Yeah, it sounds like pretty decent. And, of course, you know, one of the things about 4th of July, I mean, the fireworks, if, you know, like I have my youngest son, the fireworks scare the daylights out of me. It's just too loud.
On
television, you know, it's entertaining. And so you kind of get that, you know, that idea, you know.
They show you the fireworks. You still get to see it. To me, it's different. I always want to be outside watching that fireworks splash up on the side. I don't know why from time to time they go with those boomers just to frighten small children, but they do, and I wish they wouldn't. But I've had some times where kids were literally locked in the bathroom during the 4th of July stuff. I mean, that's how loud some of the fireworks get. But it's still so good outside. But if you miss it, yeah, they'll show you the fireworks on TV. They'll be playing music at the same time. Big orchestras, National Symphony is performing on PBS. It's good stuff.
Well, and let me tell you this. This is an aside. Yeah. It's the most common day of the year, 4th of July, for your dog to disappear. So keep that in mind. It is. It is very true because the dogs get freaked out, and they run like the daylights, and when they get done being scared, they forget and lose where they are. And yeah, the most common day to lose a dog in America is the 4th of July. Just
you know, I used to joke about the fact, I used to say that I was going to have Vietnam flashbacks during 4th of July because of all the booms. I never really did, but I used to joke about that. But all of a sudden, one time I was with my nephew's wife had just come back from duty in Afghanistan, and she got so freaked out by the 4th of July that she just quit watching, and she's never been to another 4th of July since.
And then there you go.
So that can do it for dogs, it can do it for people, it can do it for a lot of stuff. Hey, it's a good night of TV, good day of TV even without that stuff. The whole week is stuff with stuff. Shows like Scream opens tomorrow night, which I'm not that excited by, but it's a good possibility. But Extant, this Halle Berry show, opens on Wednesday. There's a new show called Zoo on Tuesday. And this isn't just cable stuff. This is CBS, big-budget CBS shows, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night. Each night they got a big sci-fi show. Things get so busy that on Thursday night, you take the 11 hours on the big four networks, 10 of them are not reruns. They're new shows, and most of those are scripted. So can you imagine? That's just a lot of new television in the summertime.
That is a lot of new TV. Give me one must-watch here before.
Okay, absolutely watch two things. Mr. Robot, the one I was telling you about last week, watch the second episode, 9 o'clock Tuesday. It's a really good show. But also, I'm really starting to like this Astronaut Wives Club, 8 o'clock on Thursdays on ABC, when I should be watching Big Bang Theory reruns. But it's getting better as it goes along. So just give that show a try. It's a good one, 8 o'clock Thursdays.
All right. Mike Hughes, always a pleasure, my friend.
Okay, have a good time. See ya.
There you have it. Mike Hughes, our executive when it comes to choosing, television entertainment. Some more serious topics still to come. We're going to talk about the convert or die proposition that the Islamic State is presenting to Christians and Jews. Convert or die, or pay a tax and probably still die. How's that going to affect people going forward? We're going to talk about that after the break. And in a more serious note before we make it to the break here, this Supreme Court landmark decision on gay marriage handed down Friday in that 5-4 ruling depended heavily on the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution. The justices seem to make perfectly clear in their decision to uphold gay marriage licenses that it was a matter of equal protection, and therefore such licenses must be recognized in all 50 states with respect to the 14th Amendment. Well, if that's true, then wouldn't it seem equally clear that the 39 states that issue concealed pistol licenses after the Supreme Court ruled in 2008 in Heller versus D.C. and clarified even further in McDonald versus Chicago 2 years later, that a person carrying a concealed license permit, say in Michigan, should be allowed to travel in Illinois without regard because this license must be recognized, according to the Supreme Court's reading here of the gay marriage decision, that if you have a CPL here in Michigan, it must be recognized elsewhere. It's going to be challenged now, but I think you'll find that these liberal justices will find a way to make it true for gay marriage, but not true for your CPL to be recognized across state lines. You know, just cynical? No, just being honest. But make no mistake, the fact that liberal thought and logic rarely commingle, it is still hard to fathom how one cannot see the irony of the ruling and how the rights outlined in the defense of gay marriage could not extend to the legally licensed concealed weapons owners across all 50 states in the United States of America. Still to come this morning, we are going to talk to Chris Mitchell, author of a new book, Destination Jerusalem, ISIS, Convert or Die. We're going to talk about Christian persecution and, you know, not only in the Middle East, but elsewhere around the world, maybe even here in the U.S. It's 25 after on a Monday on The Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show. Get the news and information vital to your world.
It's 33 after the hour. It's Monday. It's been a, you know, it has been a busy few days in the news, to say the least. By the way, the you probably knew this, but one of the escaped convicts in New York shot and killed by police. I think that was Friday, and another one brought into custody. He was shot twice yesterday, but he apparently survived. 23 days on the run. I wonder if it was worth it. You know, the last 23 days of freedom, probably worth it. Something to think about, I suppose, going forward. Looking around the world, the persecution of people of faith seems to be picking up pace. People of Christian and Jewish faith seem to be targeted ever more often and ever more freely, frankly, than probably at any time in my lifetime. Chris Mitchell here, the author of the new book, Destination Jerusalem, ISIS, Convert or Die. Chris, welcome to the program.
Yeah, great to be with you, Steve.
You know, the persecution of Christians has gone on a lot in recent years, and most people don't even realize, like the carnage in Darfur, for example. You ask 100 people what that is, and most would go, oh, I have no idea. And then now you look at ISIS, convert or die. You know, it just seems that people are just entirely too comfortable with the notion that people are being murdered for their religious beliefs.
That's true, Steve, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, is to help people understand what's happening to Christians in the Middle East and other ethnic groups. Christians were given four choices. They can convert, they could die, they could pay what's called the jizya tax for non-Muslims, or they could leave. And so right now there's well over 100,000 Christian refugees in the Middle East, and we had the opportunity to talk to a number of them, and it's kind of chilling what they have to face sometimes on a day-to-day basis.
You know, okay, so you can pay the tax, but really, do you believe that? I mean, in most of these places, pay the tax, nah, you know, it's Tuesday, they don't feel too good about you. You irritate them, pow, you're dead. I mean, come on. I mean, the chance of you surviving if you're on the tax list. And what is the tax, by the way?
Well, the tax sometimes can be something they can't even afford, so it may be almost a moot point about trying to stay. And like you say, their minds could change, and that could leave people, you know, facing the sword any day. So that's it's not a very good option for any of the Christians that
You know, and I see another story here that over 50% of the ones that will actually admit it, of Muslims living in America today want Sharia law here.
Yeah.
Over, and those are the ones that tell the truth. I think it's probably much higher than that. Right. They want Sharia law because they're the true followers of Islam. That's what they want. That's their guiding principles. Why would they not want it, I suppose, right? So, how long until this sort of nonsense, this sort of mentality, you know, leaves the Middle East, ends up, say, in Paris, France, or elsewhere?
Well, I think it's already spreading right now. And one of the factors, I think, that has to do with that is that because of the success of ISIS taking over a lot of territory and then establishing and declaring a caliphate, which they'll have their one-year anniversary July 5th, I think that tells other Muslims that, in their minds, that Allah is blessing them. And so I think that is ending, giving momentum to their movement. It's they're attracting followers and sympathy and alliances, not only in the Middle East, but around the world.
What do you think America should do? I don't think America's going to do much about it at this point. I don't see this president seems relatively disengaged from such concerns. And you can speculate about the reasoning, but he seems fairly disengaged and disconnected. So what should America be doing, and what should maybe, if we are so fortunate, a clear-thinking president do the next time around?
Well, I think, first of all, I think you can take a look at it two ways. First, militarily, I think the number one thing you could do is arm the Kurds, which is probably the only cohesive force that's facing ISIS right now. When we were there with them and on the border, and we talk about that in the book, they kept telling us, give us the arms we need and the training, because ISIS actually has better equipment, because they've captured much of that from the Iraqi army, and much of that equipment is U.S. Manufactured equipment. So that would be my number one. Increase the bombing, which right now is just very limited in terms of what could be done. And that would be, I guess, the first two things. The other thing, I think, is on an educational basis, is help inform people of what actually Sharia law does mean, what it means for the rights of women, for the minorities.
Well, but we've done that. You know, you see that every day, and when it's paraded and brought out, and the truth and the light put onto Sharia law, those that put the light on Sharia law are called bigots and, all sorts of unflattering things. You know, you're just a racist and a bigot, and you're all this nonsense. You know how it works here. You know, that's what happens.
Yeah, well, and one other name to call would be Islamophobe. I think people, there is an educational battle going on, but I agree.
Hold on. Having a lot of trouble there. It seems your phone is having some difficulty there, Chris. And so hold on one second.
Sure.
Are you there now?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you better now. I mean, you are. Okay. I failed to tell people. Where are you this morning?
Well, actually, right now I'm in California. I was out here for an event with CBN, and I'll be heading back to Israel right after the July 4th weekend. I'm going to have which is a blessing for me to be able to celebrate July 4th here in the United States.
Hey, usually, well, you know, in some countries like Malaysia and so forth, the U.S. consulate and so forth there celebrated the 4th of July on June the 4th because we didn't want to offend anybody in the middle of Ramadan and celebrate the 4th of July. God forbid that Americans would celebrate while being American. The idiocy of some of the decisions and the policies that we put forth is, well, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. No, I agree. And so that's why it's going to be a blessing for me to be here, and I'm going to be celebrating with my family. And then going back to Israel. And just to let you know, too, ISIS is actually gaining ground on the Syrian side of the Israeli border up on the Golan Heights, and that's one more front that I think we might be hearing more and more in the news, is what's happening in the South Syria right on the Israeli border.
Yeah, and you have to keep an eye out there because, you know, but here's the thing. The Peshmerga are organized, are effective, have taken a couple cities back, and, you know, the Islamic State may be, of course, I doubt they have any concern with reading history, but they might not want to open up too many fronts because it may lead to their destruction, which wouldn't break my heart, obviously, but if they get fighting on too many sides, they're going to have trouble.
That's true, and particularly if they open a front with Israel. I don't think that's anything they want to do immediately because they're certainly not strong enough to face the Israeli army. One thing they do with history is they do follow the example of Muhammad, and they follow the Quran to the letter of the law, and that speaks to the argument about trying to let people know exactly what they're doing. One of the chapters in the book talks about know your enemy. When Obama, President Obama, addressed this back in September of 2014, he said ISIS was not Islamic. And but if you talk to particularly Muslims, former Muslims who are now Christians who grew up in the Islamic faith, they'll tell you that ISIS is doing exactly what Muhammad did, what the Quran says, and so this is what Islam looks like.
Chris Mitchell, I'm sure the next time we will talk, you will be back in Israel. So travel safely. Enjoy the celebration this weekend, and then travel safely. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Steve.
There you have it. Chris Mitchell, author of the book Destination Jerusalem, ISIS, Convert or Die. It's Monday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan's radio program of record is The Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
Won't back down. No, I won't back down.
Well, while we're at it, you know, while we're having this conversation, let's expand the conversation, because I just mentioned it during the last conversation with Chris Mitchell about his book, Convert or Die, that over 50% of U.S. Muslims want Sharia law in America. And those are the ones that are telling the truth. I think the number's probably much higher than that. Wanting Sharia law, wanting to, you know, impose a tax on non-believers. You know, stone women to death for adultery. Of course, men get a pass on that deal generally. But stone women, bury women up to their shoulders, then gather around and stone them to death. Genital mutilation, beheading of homosexuals. Amputation for thieves. And this is the kind of forward thinking that is coming our way. Avi Davis here, president of the American Freedom Alliance. Avi, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Steve. Be back with you.
50%, more than 50%. And those are the ones, Avi, I believe that number is significantly higher than 50%. What do you think?
Well, it's particularly difficult to really gauge what the reactions are of Muslims in the United States. But I think we could take a mirror image from Europe, where certainly that figure is realistic, if not much higher. In Europe, of course, is a very similar similarly situated to ourselves. They have Muslim population that has failed to integrate into mainstream society, and still cling to views that are antithetical to Western values and norms. And unfortunately, we've encouraged it here in the United States as well. Multiculturalism, as many leaders have acknowledged both in Europe and the United States, has been a manifest failure. Just a terrible failure, in that young Muslims are now looking more and more in ways to deconstruct the societies in which they live in the West. And unfortunately, we're seeing the same thing happening in Muslim communities here in the United States. I think that the successes of ISIS have encouraged young Muslims to believe that Islam is the future, and that the West and its values will slowly fade away.
What do you think that it would take to get the attention of this country again? I mean, the attention was gotten on 9/11, of course. It didn't last very long, apparently, because, surprisingly, 9/11, not that, it's pretty recent history, really. And yet, it seems most people have forgotten. What would it take? Because we have this high alert threat, as you're well aware, higher than we've had in a very long time for this 4th of July, as far as a terrorist risk this weekend, 4th of July weekend here in the United States. What kind of an event would it take to actually galvanize public opinion once again?
Well, I prefer not to speculate on that, because obviously, you know, a massive attack on the United States would spur renewed interest in Islam and its animus towards the West. But what is more interesting for me is to look at 9/11 itself, and most people seem to see it. It's quite a fading memory for most people. My organization, American Freedom Alliance, held a commemoration on the 10th anniversary in 2011, and we were quite shocked at the time to see how little interest there was from the media in commemorating the events of that day, or at least tying them to the source of the attack, which were the teachings of Islam. I mean, there was absolutely no question that the killers and the murderers on 9/11 were driven by Islamic teaching, and yet that is buried in the consciousness of so many Americans now. They really see it very much like the President of the United States sees it, as an act of violent extremism, without willing to really name it for what it is and what it was.
Do you think that our president really believes that, or is it just a narrative that he delivers to the rest of us? I mean, seriously, is that really what we believe? Because too many of us know better, and yet I think we've been browbeaten and unwilling to say the truth.
Well, it's not just this president, it's the previous president, too. George W. Bush really failed to embrace the true source of the attacks on the United States. I mean, they saw both presidents. He saw the attacks, you know, as the acts of al-Qaeda, as not being motivated as Islamic in nature, but as extremist in nature, extreme Islam, if you like, which has nothing to do, in their opinion, with mainstream Islam. And it's not true. It's simply not true.
Yeah, the way I read it once, I read this once, and maybe this rings true. A moderate Muslim just watches while an extreme or whatever, more radical Muslim performs the violent act, and a moderate Muslim applauds without getting their hands dirty. Is that, you think that's a fair way to put it?
I think that's absolutely accurate. Unfortunately, the Muslim world doesn't have a broad swathe of moderate Muslims. There are Muslims who believe in Islam and those who do not, or those who do not follow the religion, those who have either left it or those who are secular. You know, I have to give you an example. You know, I work in a building in Los Angeles, and I have some colleagues there, people who work, who are not associated with American Freedom Alliance, but share office space with us. There's a couple of fellows who are very reasonable, intelligent, hardworking Americans. But when I start talking about 9/11, or when I start talking about Israel, or when I start talking about their compatriots, their co-religionists' ideas and the acts of extremism or the acts of violence perpetrated in Islam's name, they are very quick to not disavow them, but to justify them, to justify the acts.
So let's wrap things up with this today. Going to the most recent numbers available for a report just done. Michigan paid out $245 million more than it collected in 2012 to nearly one-third of state income tax filers, which were the people reporting incomes of less than $16,000. At the other end of the spectrum, the state collected $1 billion from the fewer than 1% of households who reported earnings of $500,000 or more. The information included in tax return data recently published by the Michigan Department of Treasury, it sheds lights on the ongoing debate about who pays the approximately $7 billion in annual state income tax collections. Of the 4.6 million people who filed state tax returns in 2012, 1.5 million earned between $0 and $16,000. As a group, these households got back $245 million more than they paid in. It's part of the Earned Income Tax Credit, accounting for $245 million. Just 0.7% of state income tax filers, 32,300 households, reported income greater than $500,000, yet this group paid about 15% of the $7 billion income tax revenue collected by the state. That should give you a pretty good look. See, this earned income tax credit, we pay out millions, and it gets bigger all the time. You can call what you want, the earned income tax credit, and if that's fine. It is a social program. It's a handout. It is welfare. And if you're okay with that, that's fine. But just call things by their proper name. And it's not the earned income tax credit. It is a handout. It is a redistribution of wealth in this state. It's the way it works. And the truth, well, the truth is important. At least it is to me anyway. That's going to wrap it up for this Monday. I appreciate your support here today. The program brought to you in part by Total Firearms, TotalFirearmsGunShop.com, the place to find new and used antiques, collectibles, and the very best prices possible. TotalFirearmsGunShop.com, bringing you at least this portion of the program today. I'm Steve Gruber. Thanks for stopping and check it out on Facebook, The Steve Gruber Show. Please click like and tell your friends. We'll talk tomorrow.